4CIB now presents The Law and You, proudly brought to you by Bell Legal Group. With a large team of highly experienced professionals, you can feel safe knowing that Bell Legal can help you with your legal needs.
And a very good morning to you. It's John Fradgley from the Bell Legal Group, back with you for another program of The Law and You, the second program for 2022. So if you have a question or a query, a legal question or a query, why don't you give us a call? That number is 5520888. That's 5520888. As always, we remind residents or listeners who are south of the Tweed River, don't forget to put 07 in front of the number if you're calling from down that way. Otherwise, just 5520888 is going to get you straight through to our very friendly receptionist. And you can be part of The Law and You and have your questions or queries answered. Don't forget, we also have an email address. That's talkback@4crb.com. So if you aren't in a position to get to the telephone but would like to call or would like a question answered, you can always email it and we will deal with that next week. But enough of that. We have our very first caller online, Thomas. Good morning, Thomas. How are you today?
Morning. Good, John. Thank you for taking my call.
No trouble. Did John, you try and ring last week, Thomas, and you had a bit of trouble with your phone?
No, not with our phone. I think it's your phone. Oh. Every time I rang, every time... Now, don't laugh.
No. I know we have plenty of telephone problems here at 4CIB, so I'm just laughing about the fact that it was our phone.
Sorry. I can hear you loud and clear.
Excellent. So, excellent. So how can we help you today, look, Thomas?
Okay, look, we have a spare pump and, of course, council water coming into our complex here. Now, I'm having a problem with the committee. They're saying that I can't use the spare pump to water our footpath lawn.
Right.
They're saying it's not the body corporate's responsibility, and therefore we shouldn't be doing any extra work apart from mowing it. Nothing else be done. Now, I don't think this is right. We've got a lovely lawn at the present moment, and I don't want to keep it that way. Now, this is my understanding. Because the spare pump is owned by the body corporate, they can restrict where that pump can be and can't be used and when. Whereas with the council water, because it's the council's water and they supply to us residents, that we can use that council water when and where we want to use it. In other words, like if you want to wash your car with the council water, you can do so. Am I correct in saying that they cannot, the committee, put a restriction on the council water?
Sorry, the restrictions on the council water, of course, are restrictions that the council put in place. So the council will from time to time put restrictions in place to say that, you can't wash your car or you can only wash it with a bucket or you can only water on these particular days or there's a total ban on watering. And we're all very familiar with those. And those restrictions would apply to the body corporate as well as to the individual residents in the complex. Is it a townhouse complex, Thomas, or is it a block of units?
Townhouse. Now, see what I'm saying. The committee is suggesting that they can put restrictions on the use of the council water. Well, and I'm saying I don't believe you can.
Well, I don't think they can either.
Not the council. No, not the council. The committee. I mean, the committee can't put restrictions on the council.
I don't believe the committee can do that because you would be individually metered to your townhouse, wouldn't you, for water? You get
That's
a water
correct.
Bill. Yes. Well,
that's correct.
Obviously the water
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Correction. We only have 1 meter.
Okay, so you only have 1 meter coming in for the water supply, and they're saying that they can say whether you can use that water to water things or you can't.
That's correct.
Look, Thomas, I've not ever heard of this before. My immediate reaction is that the council can't. The body corporate can't. The only qualification of that, of course, is that because if you're only coming in on 1 metre to the complex, then if someone in the complex is going absolutely berserk with water, that indirectly impacts all the other residents in the complex, because the water bill, if you're only on 1 metre, gets divided amongst all the residents regardless of how much water you use in your particular unit or you don't use. And it's been a common concern of residents in high-rise apartments where, for example, if someone owns a holiday apartment in a building and they're only there for 6 weeks of the year, but they're still paying a share of the total water consumed on the in the building by people who are, you know, living in their units permanently, they've argued that it's unfair. And there was talk years ago of all apartments being individually metered so that the water could be, you know, people could pay proportionally for their water. So, look, all I can suggest, Thomas, is that I can have a look at this and see whether there's any basis upon which the body corporate would be able to pass a bylaw to say that you can't use council water for watering. But why are they saying you can't use the spear pump water?
Well, that's the stupidity of it, John. Common sense died some 15 years ago and stupidity has taken over. That's why I can't understand that either. They must have their personal reasons for wanting to do it, but and I thought, well, damn them. If they're going to put restrictions on the spear pump, I'll use the town water.
Yep.
You know, and with the town water comes a cost. It's called water rates.
Exactly.
You know,
and all the residents in that complex are going to share the cost of watering, as I mentioned a moment ago. But it just defies me. Where is the spear pump located? Is it on common property or is it on your property?
Well, it's actual fact in an exclusive use area on the common property.
Right, so the spear pump belongs to the body corporate?
Yes, it does.
So why would they want the footpath to die?
Oh, I don't think they could answer that question, John.
I mean, at the moment, I would suggest that probably very little watering is required because we're getting that much rain.
Well, that's right.
But in times in times when we're getting no rain at all, that's the obvious purpose of having a spear pump, is to be able to still provide water and to keep your lawns and gardens looking nice. One of the problems sometimes with spear pumps, of course, is that there's a high, I think it's a high iron content in the water, and it can, or the water may be brackish, and it will make concrete and walls on buildings turn that awful brown colour. And I could understand if the body corporate was concerned about the footpaths and the rock coated walls of, or painted walls of, buildings going brown from the use of spear water. But beyond that, it just seems to be a bit of a mystery to me. So, Thomas, can you leave that with
me? I'll just say, John, that the water that comes out of our spear pump, I check it regularly, it's clear.
Right.
It's lovely. Look, we're not too far from the beach.
Right.
And I remember this spear pump went in 1995 when we were living here then, and that was during a drought.
Yep.
And that's why we put the spear pump in. And the guy who put it in for us said he didn't have to go down terribly far to get water for us, you know. So, and when I'm hosing with it, it is clear water. It doesn't stain at all.
Yes. No, well,
you know?
Part of the thing, of course, I was living on the beach side for a little while, and I remember the fellow who came out to service our spear pump, and he said that because there's so much of the pure sand from that beach area in the ground, the water gets filtered very well. So quite often you will end up with very clear water. But then, oddly enough, there are pockets in that beachside area as well where the water is quite brackish. So there's never any rhyme or reason to it. But look, leave that with me, Thomas, and I'll certainly have a look at that, and I'll make a point of commenting on it next week.
Thank you very much, John.
Okay,
Thank you, Thomas.
The very best. This is The Law and You on 4CRB. Our telephone number is 5520888. That's 5520888. If you have a question or a query, the lines are presently completely open. No callers online. So if you call now, you'll get straight through. That's 5520888. And while we're waiting for some more callers to come through, and by the way, thank you to all the people who called in last week and made for such an interesting program. A lot of calls to start the year off, and that was very much appreciated. I did have a few other things that I was going to talk about last week, but of course didn't get time to get to. And one of them was prompted by one of the sponsorship announcements that's run on 4CRB for the Animal Welfare League, Animal Welfare Queensland, about pets and what happens to your pet when you die. And under Australian law, pets are actually considered to be property, so you can't leave your estate to a pet. However, there are a number of options that you can take up. One of the things you need to ensure is that you do have a will. And if you haven't made specific provision in your will for where your pet is to go and be looked after, then bear in mind that your pet will pass to whoever is the residuary beneficiary under your will. So, for example, if you've got a will which left the residue of your estate to a charity, and I'm speaking here of other than an animal welfare charity, but if you left the residue of your estate to a charity, then obviously they would not be able to take your pet or do anything with your pet, and this could create a real dilemma for the executors under your will as to what they're going to do with your pet. So the obvious thing to do is to think about who you could have look after your pet in the event of your untimely passing, and to talk to those beneficiaries to make sure that you choose a beneficiary who would be happy to look after your pet going forward. The other thing to think about too, of course, is the cost of looking after your pet after you're gone, and thinking about making some sort of financial provision from your estate for the upkeep of your pet in that time, and that could be a lump sum payment or something similar. So they're just a few ideas, and of course the Animal Welfare League have a great program where they will assist with pets in the event of your passing or indeed your illness, so you can give them a call. But enough of that, we've got another caller online as we say good morning to Sammy. Good morning, Sammy, how are you today? Sammy, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Sure can, Sammy. How are you today?
Good, John. How are you?
Very well, thank you. How can I help?
Well, I've got a complex question. Mm-hmm. I live in a complex in a townhouse situation, and the caretaker's rights have been sold. They will swap hands in about 7 days.
Mm-hmm.
My concern is that they don't live on site.
Right.
They live about 15 minutes away, and I'm concerned that the properties won't be maintained as they should. They've had to sign a contract in agreement with everything that the body corp has asked them to do. What happens in the case of if they don't comply with what the body corp has asked? What can they do about it?
Well, if they fail to comply with the contract that the caretakers have with the body corporate, then of course they'd be in breach of the contract, and the body corporate would be entitled to take legal action against them to enforce the terms of the agreement. So that's the obvious thing. The other thing, if they've purchased the management rights, it would be interesting to see whether there was a requirement in the existing agreement for the caretakers to live on site, because normally caretaking rights are attached to a unit, which is commonly referred to as the caretakers or the manager's unit. But that's not to say that the caretaker of a building could not live off-site, particularly in a building where there's no management of letting rights. So, in other words, they're basically all essentially either permanent residents or alternatively they're long-term tenants, and those tenancies are being dealt with by a real estate agency, and the manager doesn't have a real estate license. So they'd be a couple of things. I suppose it also comes down to what other obligations the manager has under the caretaking agreement, or the caretaker has, and what the expected response time is in relation to any of those duties that they have under the agreement.
Yeah, it's been a bit of an awkward situation. The owner actually has a unit on site. She lived there for a little while, but then decided to go back and live in South Australia.
Right.
Rented that unit out, and then just had someone come in from time to time to just do incidentals. And I mean, really, he wasn't doing the work that we asked him to do. So it's really been mismanaged poorly, and I'm now worried that this same situation is going to occur with someone not living on site. Now, in saying that, there are 10 rentals. It's a boutique property. There are 26 townhouses in it, and we all know each other fairly well. But unfortunately, when you get rentals in, and really I don't like saying this, but they don't tend to their property like they should. And when there's not a caretaker on board, all sorts of things, even in the rubbish bin room.
Yes. Well, I suppose the problem, of course, is that when you have a resident, be they an owner or a tenant, a rental person that's breaching the bylaws, you really need someone on site who can deal with that. Although, that being said, there are, of course, many buildings that don't have a resident manager and yet are able to function and have bylaws enforced for rental people and for all of the residents without the necessity of an on-site caretaker. So I think it comes down really, Sammy, to the terms of the contract and to make sure that everything that you expect to be done under that agreement is included in the agreement, and secondly, that there are clear provisions as to what will occur in the event that there's a breach of the agreement. In addition to the caretaker, do you also have body corporate managers who look after the body corporate records and sending out the notices of levies and all that sort of thing?
I'm on the body corp, but just as a voter, basically. But we do have a chairman who lives off-site in Sydney. And we also have a secretary who lives on-site.
Okay, so you don't have a management company looking after the body corporate?
No. Yes, we do.
Because quite often their agreement will include a requirement that they make sure that caretakers and or managers comply with the terms of their agreement. So that might be another option, to have them ensuring that the new caretakers will comply. All right, then.
Right. Thank you very much, John.
Okay, then. All the very best, Sammy. Time on 4CRB is 23 and a half minutes past 9, past 10 on the Tweed. And we say good morning to Antoinette. Good morning, Antoinette. How are you?
Good morning, John. I'm all right, thank you. How are you?
Very well indeed. Thanks. How can I help you today?
I want to know, how would I go about coming off as a client of the Queensland Public Trustee?
Sorry, how do you what?
How would I go about coming off being a client of the Queensland Public Trustee?
So do you, when you say a client of the Queensland Public Trustee, do you mean that you've got a will or a power of attorney with them and they're appointed as the executor of your will and or the...
I do,
EPOA?
What's an EPOA?
Enduring Power of Attorney.
Yes, I've made a will with the public trustee,
right.
But my issue is I pay them $10,500 in fees per year, and I've been a client for 6 years.
Right.
And I would like to manage my own financial affairs.
Okay, were your financial affairs put in their hands as a result of some form of court order that they manage your affairs, or is it just that you volunteered them into their hands?
A doctor recommended I go into the hands of the public trustee.
All right, so is there, So is there an order in place?
There's no court order.
There's no court order. All right. Well, look, in those circumstances, Antoinette, you should be able to retake control of your affairs without any trouble at all. I would suggest that you live on the Gold Coast, do you?
Yes.
Okay. So would it be possible for you to get to their Southport office of the public trustee?
Yes.
I would suggest that you simply make an appointment and go in and see them and tell them that you wish to resume control of your own personal affairs and just find out from them what's required in order for you to be able to do that.
I was informed I need to apply to QCAT.
Oh, well, it sounds to me like you may be under some form of order whereby the public trustee has control of your affairs. So if that's the case, then that's an entirely different thing, Antoinette. And I would recommend that you seek some legal advice. Which suburb of the Gold Coast do you live in?
At Burleigh Waters.
Burleigh Waters. Okay. And is it possible for you to get to the Robina Town Centre fairly easily?
Yes.
Okay. So what I would suggest that you do is go to the Robina Community Legal Centre, or it's now called My Community Legal. It operates at the Robina, the Gold Coast City Council Robina Community Centre, which is on Robina Town Centre Drive. Do you know where the Gold Coast City Council Library and Community Hall is at Robina?
Yes.
It's directly west of the shopping centre and just slightly north of the Anglican Church there. So you can go there on a Thursday evening from 6:30 p.m. until 8:30 p.m. I'd recommend that you go early though, and you can get free legal advice from a number of lawyers who come in there and donate their services each Thursday evening to provide free legal advice. So if you go in there with all the documents that you've got relevant to the public trustee's control of your affairs, they will be able to assist you in telling you what needs to be done. Now, they won't be able to bring the application to QCAT or anything of that nature, but they will be able to set you on the right track as to what you need to do in order to get control of your affairs back, which may include referring you to a lawyer who can assist you with bringing that application before QCAT.
I was informed I need to do a course in proving I have got the skills to manage my money.
Mm-hmm.
And I was told I would represent myself at QCAT.
You very well may represent yourself at QCAT, but you do have the right to ask for legal representation. It's at the discretion of the party, so it would be at the discretion of the commissioner or the tribunal member who's hearing the matter, and also the representative of the public trustee. But I would think in your circumstances it's probably likely that you would be given consent to have a lawyer present if you wanted it. But as I say, Antoinette, I think your starting point is to go to the My Community Legal on Thursday evening at 6:30 and seek some advice. All right then.
Okay, thank you, John.
Okay,
bye.
Antoinette, all the very best. And probably our final caller for the day, we say a very good morning to Brad. G'day, Brad, how are you?
Yes, I'm good, thank you.
That's good. How can we help you, Brad?
Yes, I've got a problem which involves, I put a deposit on a caravan to purchase, and I thought I had the understanding of my wife to buy the caravan, but I didn't, apparently.
Oh, dear.
Anyway, exactly. It's a private sale, which apparently makes a big difference, and I've contacted the chap, and I haven't spoken to him personally, but I've told him that, you know, that I didn't wish to proceed, and even though we'd had a, you know, I paid a deposit, et cetera, et cetera, but, you know, he's objecting to that, saying we had an agreement, which we did, and I understand, but I'm prepared to forego the deposit that I've paid him because I've mucked him about, and I was wondering how I stand legally.
Right, so the agreement is simply a verbal agreement, or is there something in writing?
Well, no, there wasn't a, well, he's given me a receipt. And I've exchanged a few text messages. So
there's an agreement on price. a record of the agreement on price, and you've paid a deposit. So probably, Brad, there is a legally enforceable contract in place. The seller would have a couple of options. They could terminate the contract and forfeit your deposit, which is probably the most logical thing for them to do. Or their other option would be that they would have to bring an application for specific performance of the contract to force you to settle. Now, I think that it would be highly unlikely that the seller would do that, because it's quite a rigmarole to go through, and I think you would probably find that that they would think, well, if I take the deposit, I can then resell the caravan, and you know, I've got that as a start on the sale to some new purchaser.
Yeah, sure. So if he proceeded to do that, would I be liable for any legal costs?
Well, it depends which jurisdiction he sued you in. I don't deal with this form of litigation, and haven't for some years. So my last recollection was that the power for specific performance of a contract can be taken in either the district court or the Supreme Court. I don't think you can sue for specific performance in the magistrate's court. The other option for him would be to resell the caravan, and he could sue you for the difference between the price you agreed to pay and the price that he gets for the caravan. But he'd have to be able to show that he's taken all steps reasonably necessary to get the best price reasonably obtainable for the caravan. Brad, whereabouts on the coast do you live?
I'm in Helensvale.
Helensvale, okay, so you're up the northern end of the coast. What I would suggest... Where's the seller?
Ormo.
Okay, look, what I would suggest you do, can you get into Southport reasonably easily?
Yeah.
Okay, so I'll give you the number for the Gold Coast Community Legal Centre and Advice Bureau. Got a pen handy?
Yep. Yes.
Okay, so 5532.
Yep.
9611. Their address is 34 Railway Street in Southport.
Yep.
And if you give them a call, I'd suggest that you make an appointment to go in and see them. You could take into them your phone that's got the text messages on. You could take in the receipt, etc. Just go through all the facts and circumstances, and they'd be able to assist you in advising what the various options are.
Okay. And what was the name of that court?
It's called the Gold Coast Community Legal Centre and Advice Bureau.
Community Centre and Advice Bureau.
Mm. All right, then.
Okay. All right, do I have fees involved in that, John?
Sorry, no, it's a free service.
Oh, okay, great. All right, well, I appreciate your help very much.
No trouble at all. All the very best. Well, that's all the time we've got. Thank you for your company this morning for The Law and You. I'll look forward to being back with you, of course, next week for another program. But as always, from me, John Fradgley, it's goodbye and God bless.
You've been listening to The Law and You, proudly brought to you by Bell Legal Group, the Gold Coast's longest established law firm. Helping Gold Coasters since 1955. Call them today on 5597 3366.